President Gregorian, faculty members, postgraduates and graduating students, ladies and gentlemen. President Gregorian, thank you for your very generous words. It is a great honor for me to be at this commencement ceremony at Brown. As Brown represents much of what is best in Western liberal education, let me also congratulate the graduating students for whom the memory of this day, I am sure, will remain with them throughout their lives. Looking around this colorful gathering, I recall helping in the choice of the Afghan University's regalia. Our research into Islamic traditions of academic dress revealed that an academic's rank determined the height of his hat. The higher the rank, the taller the hat. The senior-most professors, therefore, always appeared taller than their students, even when sitting down. I have just learned that my friend Neil Rudenstein, the president of Harvard, has given instructions that all Harvard hats are to be heightened by at least a foot. This has caused havoc in the Ivy League, which is now debating resolution MAHH96, standing for Maximum Allowable Hat Height. My academic standing, and that of President Gregorian, should be evident from the hat that we are presently wearing. One of the things most often said to university students on their graduation day is that they must now prepare to face the real world. You should be glad to hear that I'm not going to tell you that. But as someone who has been living and working in the real world for a very long time, I can tell you this. The world is now a different place. It is different from what it was 40 years ago. 5 years ago, different even from last month's world. It is different because we are witnessing a massive acceleration in the rate of global change. Today's world is a living environment in which you will have to adapt much faster than your parents did in order to have a positive and constructive impact on the future. Having said this, the means at your disposal to achieve such an impact have multiplied exponentially during the last decade. Never before has there been so much knowledge available about so many different people. Never before have we known more about the physical world in which we live. Never before, therefore, have there been opportunities greater to make a better life for more people around the globe. For the last 50 years, our planet has been frozen by a paralyzing bipolar political vortex, which we call the Cold War. During those years, many allowed their views to stagnate and harden into notions so dependable that they became unrevisable dogmas. My capitalism versus your communism. Your Eastern Bloc versus our Western Bloc. Left versus right. But like the Berlin Wall, our bipolar system was dismantled almost overnight, and with it the black and white world to which we had grown accustomed. Unfortunately, views and thought habits, although intangible, are less easily broken than bricks and politics. Learned human behavior dies hard. The world has become a hurting place in which change occurs constantly, and in which we need to learn again to evolve. free now from an artificial tug of war in which most were only expected to identify with the rope. We are facing a world of doubt and questioning and universal uncertainty, the new hallmark of our time. Growing from our thawing earth today is the unsure and uncomfortable process of discovering and learning about mobility and change. In all societies, disconcerting but pertinent questions are being asked. Who will lead in the process of change? What beliefs should guide us? Will there be scientific statements and data, or philosophical visions? What constraints or opportunities will shape our future? What are the priorities that we must address first, and why should there be priorities? That these questions are asked and answered correctly should be a source of concern to us all, because if the responses do not come principally from those of us fortunate enough to have been educated, fortunate enough to have food and medicine and shelter, who can make progress in providing these things to the less fortunate, the responses will come from the contestations of the excluded. In short, the responses should come from you. In this new and challenging environment, the people and nations which were paralyzed by someone else's struggle for supremacy are free now to hope. Despite global acceleration, America still benefits from the intellectual liberty and hope for the future on which this nation was founded. But these elements, too easily taken for granted by those who are used to them, are of primordial concern in many other societies. In Algeria, Bosnia, Rwanda, Tajikistan, people are fighting and dying because their lives can finally be changed. Those nations that used to be part of the Third World have become an obscure South and East that, in emerging from obscurity, are increasingly present. Indeed, the world you're about to enter is a fluid one in which you will have to be flexible. President Gregorian tells me that I'm the first Muslim ever to give the baccalaureate address at the Brown commencement in the school's illustrious 232-year history. This makes the occasion a very special honor for me. It also carries the considerable, even intimidating, responsibility to speak about the place of Islam and of Muslims in the world today, about their hopes and aspirations, and about the challenges that they face. It is also my responsibility, and indeed a pleasure for me, to speak about what might be done and some things that are being done to respond to these challenges. My position since 1957 as Imam of the Shia Ismaili Muslims bears no political mandate. It is an independent one from which I can speak to you openly. Today in the Occident, the Muslim world is deeply misunderstood by most. The West knows little about its diversity, about the religion or the principles which unite it, about its brilliant past or its recent trajectory in history. The Muslim world is noted in the West, North America, and Europe more for the violence of certain minorities than for the peacefulness of its faith and the vast majority of its people. The words Muslim and Islam have themselves come to conjure the image of anger and lawlessness in the collective consciousness of most Western cultures. And the Muslim world has consequently become something that the West may not want to think about, does not understand, and will associate with only when it is inevitable. Not only this image is wrong, but there are powerful reasons that we cannot overlook, which the West and the Muslim world must seek a better understanding. Of those reasons, the first is that with the Eastern Bloc weakened militarily, financially, and politically, the Muslim world is one of only two potential geopolitical forces vis-à-vis the West on the world stage, the other being the East Asian tigers. There are large Muslim minorities living in and impacting many European countries. The Muslim world controls most of the remaining fossil fuel reserves. There is a resurgence of Islam in countries of strategic importance to the West, such as Turkey. Several Muslim states have nuclear ambitions. The Gulf War proved that events in the Muslim world do have a direct impact on global economics and security. The West should ignore neither the evolution of the Muslim Central Asian republics nor their interplay on the future of Russia. Much of sub-Saharan Africa is Muslim, and none of us can turn our backs on this continent in need. The second reason why the Islamic world and the West should seek increased mutual understanding is that in the wake of the Cold War, it has become obvious that violence and cruelty of all ilk are a plague gaining ground around the globe. It can be military or paramilitary and brutal, or it can be structural and inconspicuous and no less brutal. It ranges from suicide bombings to ethnic cleansing to the forgetting and abandoning of large segments of society, even by industrialized nations such as this one. Against this worrying global background, it must be made utterly clear that insofar as Islam is concerned, this violence is not a function of the faith itself, as much as the media would have you believe. This is a misperception which has become rampant, but which should not be endowed with any credibility. It is wrong and damaging. The myth that Islam is responsible for all the wrongdoing of certain Muslims may well stem from the truism that for all Muslims, the concepts of deen and dunya, faith and world, are inextricably linked, more so than any other monotheistic religion. The corollary is that in a perfect world, all political and social action on the part of Muslims would always be pursued within the ethical framework of the faith. But this is not yet a perfect world. The West, nonetheless, must no longer confuse the link in Islam between spiritual and temporal with that between state and church. With the death of King Charles I and Louis XVI, Western culture initiated a process of secularization which grew into present-day democratic institutions and lay cultures. Islam, on the other hand, never endorsed any political dogma. So the historical process of secularization which occurred in the West never took place in Muslim societies. what we're witnessing today in certain Islamic countries is exactly the opposite evolution, the theocratization of the political process. There is no unanimity in the Islamic world on the desirability of this trend, but it would certainly be less threatening if the humanistic ethics of the faith were the driving force behind the processes of change. The news capturing power of this trend contributes to the Western tendency to perceive all Muslims or their societies as a homogeneous mass of people living in some undefined theocratic space, a single other evolving elsewhere. And yet, with the Muslim majority in some 44 countries and nearly a quarter of the globe's population, it should be evident that our world cannot be made up of identical people sharing identical goals, motivations, or interpretations of the faith. It is a world in itself, vast and varied in its aspirations and in its concerns. Is there not something intellectually uncouth about those who choose to perceive 1 billion people of any faith as a standardized mass? It is possible that the near total burden, unfortunately, of underdevelopment, from which only a few Muslim countries have yet been able to extricate themselves, unites us in the eyes of the West and thus sets us apart from it. No world faith, perhaps, has such a high concentration of people living in poverty and fear. From disease to political disenchantment, to the defenselessness of national integrity, from the loss of cultural identity to confusion in the face of the new forces of pluralism, free market economics, and meritocracy. No reasonable or equitable mind could question either the logic or the justification for our fear of Occidentalization or the loss of our Muslim identity. No one could question our fear of the disassociation of our belief and practice from our secular lives, of our difficulties in producing and managing wealth, of our need to create a system of laws compatible with the ethics of our faith, but no less compatible with today's world and the needs of tomorrow. The Muslim world, once a bastion of scientific and humanistic knowledge, a rich and self-confident cradle of culture and art, has never forgotten its past. The abyss between this memory and the towering problems of tomorrow would cause disorientation even in the most secure societies. You may ask, and justly so, what has happened to that world? Why has it reached such an advanced stage of fragility? Many contemporary problems in the Islamic world are the result of punctual political conflicts prompted by the end of colonialism and the Cold War. Are the roots of the conflict in Kashmir not anchored in the partition of India in 1947? Are not the civil wars in Afghanistan and Tajikistan due more to the political convulsions of the dying Cold War than to religious conflict between Muslims themselves? Is the conflict in Algeria caused by differences in interpretation of the faith among Algerians, or by an attempted political change which put to the test has failed?